Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody, and welcome aboard another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week, coming from Panama City, Panama. The trip down there allowed me to have extended conversations with three movers and shakers on the world tourism stage. Ivan Eskildsen, the Minister of Tourism of Panama. Niels Olsen, the Minister of Tourism of Ecuador. And then I stopped by the headquarters of an airline most of you have never flown, let alone heard of. But it's an amazing hub-and-spoke operation and connects the world through Panama City. And that's Copa. I'll speak with Pedro Halbrun. He's the CEO of Copa. It's an airline that flies to 70 destinations as well as 16 cities in North America. This efficient, well-run airline boasts connecting times of 30 minutes with time to spare. Copa is a Latin America success story, even now as they emerge from the pandemic. First up, Ivan Eskildsen, the Minister of Tourism of Panama.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ivan, nice to see you again.
It's great to see you again. Last time we saw each other was probably in Ecuador in the other previous edition.
It was
2.5 years ago.
I know. It's been a long time, but I'm glad to always be back in Panama. And I guess the first question is going to be it's an obvious question. As the world slowly emerges from the pandemic, and hopefully it gets to be an endemic, as the world now tries to tackle with the terrible situation in Ukraine and all the ripple effect and the cascading effect of that, you know, we've gone from one crisis to another. We're living in a world of disruption. How has Panama been able to weather the storm and navigated what essentially is uncharted waters?
Well, the challenges are certainly not, let's say static. They continue to come. When we thought that 1 year was a long time for the pandemic, here we are 2 years later and we're still dealing with the new episodes that they bring. And now, as you mentioned, with a difficult situation in Ukraine. So for us, the answer or the solution is always keeping an eye open, keeping a short communication and continuous communication with the private sector to see how we can capitalize on the short-term opportunities while not losing the sight on the medium and long-term, which is really the main focus of the strategy we are implementing in Panama with a brand new sustainable tourism master plan.
Well, let's back up a second and just go back about 2 years mm-hmm. to when we knew nothing about COVID. Mm-hmm. We were basically, you know, flying in the dark. How did you quickly adjust, or did you quickly adjust, and what lessons did you learn from a public health perspective about how to go forward?
Well, I think nobody had a handbook, right? Every country implemented strategies the best way they could. In our case, let's say Panama adopted more conservative strategies as far as the restrictions are concerned. And this now obviously impacts or has been impacted in the way that, you know, we are now trying to work our way out of it, even though our restrictions are now mostly freed and we have been working on, you know, just accepting the vaccination certificate. There was a previous decree installed a few like a month ago, confirming this fact to liberate, for example, the COVID testing when people for travelers that are vaccinated, right? So for us, the main let's say takeaway from this this very very crazy times that we all lived is just crisis management and how to work as a team with the private sector, with the rest of the governmental institutions, including the Ministry of Health, and try to find solutions that really work their way across the board.
You know, from a consumer perspective, one of the subtexts that people didn't really talk about, but they sure thought about it a lot, and every once in a while they'd vocalize it to me is, you know, I really want to go to X, could be Panama. I really want to go to Y, could be, you know, someplace else in the Caribbean. But I don't want to go and get stuck mm-hmm. and not be able to get back home. And what we saw, at least in some government levels, like Costa Rica did one, Mexico, some Mexican governments did, and the different states did another. But we really saw it in the private sector, where a lot of the private sector quickly pivoted and said, okay, we're going to cover you. If you come here and you test positive for COVID, we'll put you up at our expense and take care of you and fly you home. I mean, that was to really give everybody that security blanket. And here's the interesting thing, Mr. Minister. I went back and tried to do a survey of how many people actually went and got tested positive and stayed there for 2 weeks and got flown home. The answer is very, very few. But they loved going there because at least they knew they were protected.
Absolutely. Again, we were talking about how we can really manage the situation and make the most out of also specific opportunities. In our case, for example, we were the first country in Latin America to announce a strategy to receive tourists that would like to get vaccinated. This was back in October of last year. So we quickly decided to start a promotional campaign.
So you'd fly here to get vaccinated.
So because Latin America, you know, doesn't always have, Latin Americans don't always have, let's say, a visa for the U.S., so we attracted those travelers that had not traveled to the U.S. to get vaccinated, because the U.S. was the first country to have a very, you know, advanced vaccination implementation. So a lot of the, let's say, the people that had visas from our countries went to the U.S. to get vaccinated. So again, the strategy was focused on unvaccinated travelers that didn't have a visa that we wanted to get vaccinated. So again, trying to make the most out of a difficult situation, but always trying to see how we can manage that crisis.
We're talking to Ivan Eskildsen, the Minister of Tourism of Panama. Ivan, I'm going to go back about probably 8 years. Mm-hmm. And I landed in Panama. I was here doing a story for CBS News. And as I got off the plane, there was a guy there, and he handed me a piece of paper. I thought, oh, it's another form to sign. I didn't even want to take it. He said, no, take it. And I'm reading it before I go to passport control, and it's a letter to me from one of your predecessors, Minister of Tourism, saying, we want you to feel safe in Panama, and so, by the way, this is your insurance. While you're here, if you get sick or any reason at all, we'll take care of you. You're already covered. I'm like going, how cool is that? Are you still doing that?
Actually, that stopped before this government, and then when COVID hit, we proposed it to re-implement it or to reactivate it, and it was presented to the board, and at that moment, the analysis turned out that it was too expensive for the result, and so the board did not approve it. But I do recognize that back then it was a very successful strategy.
You
remember it very well.
I do.
Right?
How could you not remember a country that says we're taking care of you the minute you hit our soil?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this is something we certainly haven't, let's say, completely discarded, right, for a future strategy, because I believe it certainly was a very good strategy.
Now, outside of just the North American or the U.S. market, you are an international destination. After all, it is the Panama Canal. How many people don't realize the revenue that canal brings in for your country? Because, everybody's focused now on supply chain disruption, mm-hmm. things not getting through. How many ships are going through the Panama Canal as we're speaking right now?
Well, if you go out the window here from this hotel, you can see the line a very long line of ships waiting to get in. So, it's something to get in the line and to, make sure you want to go through it, you have to plan well ahead. So, yeah, Panama really is a hub as for logistics, for the commercial connection. Also connected now to air connectivity because, we have this truly exceptional, natural characteristic as a geostrategic positioning that makes Panama unique. And that brings with it just a long history.
It's the two oceans.
Yeah, it's the two oceans and the narrowest point in the Americas. So what turned out to be the Panama Canal was actually thought by the King Charles V of Spain when the Spaniards had the Panama as a colony back in 1513. Obviously, back then they thought it was a crazy idea.
Hey, look, the Spaniards said everybody is a colony out here.
Exactly. But yeah, so really, and this again, 300 years later, it was the first interoceanic railway that was built by the U.S. and inaugurated in 1855. So always the theme of the connectivity, the meeting point, and now the hub that we're working as, both the air connectivity, an events hub, a cruise hub as well. So everything that can be benefit from this potential in connectivity and not only by sea, but by air and land is something that we can do well and that we continue to see a lot of opportunities.
Let's just talk quickly about some numbers. In terms of annual revenue, is Panama Canal numero uno?
As far as
revenue for the country?
Well, actually, as far as the region, in the, let's say, the interoceanic zone, it is. When you go nationwide and you add, for example, to tourism, when you add the air, air to the GDP or the airlines to the GDP, actually tourism actually represents more of a percentage.
So many people realize, or don't realize, I should say, the true importance of airlift to any country's economy, because without it, everything dries up, right? There's shipping, of course, but in terms of the flow of people and money and business, it's coming in by plane. We saw what happened, and the only time we actually realize this is if a volcano erupts in Iceland and the world travel shuts down for 5 days, or God forbid, 9/11, and we shut down travel in the United States for 5 days. How difficult is it for you to convince the other ministers in your government about the importance of airlift? Because you need more of it. You don't need less of it.
Absolutely. I mean, everything that, we talked to actually today, that everything in relation to tourism has such an impact on other areas of the government that it is a permanent conversation with other ministers, and that's also why our president created in this administration a tourism cabinet. So air connectivity is not an exception. In this case, for example, another government entity manages the airport. There's a different entity also that is the aeronautic administrative entity. But then also, there's migration from the Ministry of Security. Another areas that have such an impact that this conversation is constant on how can we work together to attract obviously during the pandemic was to reactivate the airlift that we had previous to the pandemic, Panama City as the most connected city in Latin America. But now we're certainly now obviously thinking of how can we continue attracting new routes to connect new cities and thus new
through
markets.
Through Panama.
Exactly.
You know, a shout out to your airline, Copa, because if you look at their route network, it's amazing. If I needed to go from Los Angeles to Montego Bay, I'm coming through Panama. I don't have to go through Miami. I don't have to go through Charlotte. It's a better connection. And if I'm going through further south into South America, once again, it's Copa. You know, they only operate one. They're sort of like the Southwest, if you'll excuse the expression, of Panama, because they only operate one type of airplane, right? That means they're only training one type of crew. They can do quick turnarounds. They can turn a plane in 25 minutes. And it's a very efficient airline. But if you look at the map, and I wish most of my listeners would do that, you would see all the opportunities you have here if you hub in Panama. And of course, and the Minister of Tourism didn't tell me to say this, but if you're going to hub in Panama, you might as well come and stay a few days, because why wouldn't you? It's right here.
Absolutely. And it is the hidden gem, the place to discover, in the sense that Panama hadn't really developed as a tourist destination. And Panama City has been a vibrant business hub for years now. But now we are uncovering, uncovering these potentialities throughout the country, in our beaches, in our mountains, in general, in our jungle. And so the nature and the culture integrated in this very, very unique destination.
Well, you're talking about new hiking and biking trails. You're talking about,
exactly.
I mean, all sorts of connectivity within 2 hours of Panama City.
Exactly. So that's the wonder of Panama. It's a safe country. It's well connected. And being small, it's short distances to get to know very, very different cultures, very, very different ecosystems, and beaches, and all sorts of different experiences.
You know, if you've never been to Panama before, and you think I'm just being overtly touristic here, I'm not. Every chance I get, I come back and I retake the tour of the Panama Canal. It's one of the most fascinating history lessons you'll ever get, because we think, oh yeah, the Americans built it. Really? Let's go back and look at it. Oh my God, how many thousands of people died before we got involved? I mean, does the word malaria ring a bell? The French, everybody else who came in here failed. They failed, and finally somebody broke through, and it changed the course of history, didn't it?
Absolutely. Actually, it helped back then for the U.S. Let's say it was a turning point as far as geostrategic power worldwide, because thanks to the Panama Canal, the U.S. was able to sort of had a better control of the seas, right? Obviously, then the canal passed through Panamanian hands, and then for us, it was also a big, big game changer, now providing a very, very important source of income for the government yearly. And you mentioned all this history, and it goes back and back and back and back, because I mentioned the Panama First Interoceanic Railway and other elements that have always been in relation to our rich history in connection to our strategic positioning.
Well, you talk about the Spanish colonizing here.
Yeah.
What about the U.S.?
Absolutely.
I mean, until 1978, we were it. In fact, the currency here is still the U.S. dollar.
That's right.
Unbelievable. You got to get over to the old Canal Authority, take a look at those buildings there, but go in the visitor center and look at the old trains that they're using to move those ships through the locks. It's unbelievable. It really is.
And I would add also, if you haven't done it, to go with a boat in the Panama Canal, in an excursion. You can see the huge ships right above you, but then you go into the jungle, you go see indigenous villages of indigenous peoples right there. So the proximity of all of these variety of experiences and just being in the tropics and having the opportunity to engage directly and have contact with these pristine environments is such a great opportunity.
Well, it's not just the proximity, it's the juxtaposition. You're dealing with centuries-old villages, and all of a sudden,
the
big
modern
super tankers coming through. It's
exactly,
unreal.
Exactly.
What
exactly.
A great thing. My thanks to Minister Eskildsen. And now for another perspective, I talked with Niels Olsen. He's the Minister of Tourism of Ecuador. Mr. Minister, welcome.
Hola, Peter. Thank you so much for having me.
And I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, you actually spent some time in Baton Rouge.
I did. I went to LSU for 4 years, so I'm a Tiger.
Yeah, you are a Tiger. You still have the purple and yellow?
Of course,
okay.
Always.
Well, here's to a better football season next year. We don't want to talk about the football season this year.
No, let's talk about Ecuador.
Okay, good, okay. All right, but at least I'm talking to a Tiger. Bottom line is, we've had a really rough 2.5 years. It's going to stay pretty rough, at least for the end of this year, if you're looking at tourism as a whole. Things are getting better, but we've gone from one major headline, which is COVID, to another, which is Ukraine. Mm-hmm. We're looking at rising fuel prices, rising airfares, going up at the rate of about, they were going up at the rate of about 7% every 10 days. Now they're going up about every 7% every 3 days because of this knee-jerk reaction to the fuel prices. And then there's, of course, a change in demand because of the situation in Ukraine. It's not just the airspace over Ukraine. It's 60% of the airspace over the world that's suddenly shut off, and people are, like, afraid. So from a country that depends on tourism as much as you do, how do you pivot? How do you figure out a way to give people their security blanket, if you will, to give them confidence? And it can't just be by discounting. Mm-hmm. So what do you do?
Crazy times. I think this is a time to push. Push very, very hard. So from we've been in this, our government has been in place for 10 months now, and now we have a very strategic marketing plan and promotion plan. So we're going to be very aggressive to promote Ecuador as a safe destination, because it is. It's full of beautiful people, beautiful land, experiences, authentic and genuine.
And I can say we did one of our special royal tours a number of years ago with your then president. We had an amazing time. We went to see things we didn't even know existed. I mean, we did Quito, we did Guayaquil, but we did so many other places. It was just like, oh my God, who knew?
Where did you go?
We went everywhere.
Did you go to the Amazon rainforest?
We did.
You said you missed Cuenca, which is an absolutely amazing, beautiful city.
Didn't get to Cuenca, which is a beautiful city. But no, we did the rainforest. We were doing crazy stuff in the jungle. I mean, it was great.
That's beautiful. You have to come back and let me know when you come back. I'll take you to Cuenca and all of those different places that you didn't visit.
All right. You realize we're on the air and you just made me an offer.
Of course.
Okay, good. Okay, we'll move on. But, okay, it's one thing to say we're going to push and make sure that people know it's a safe place. Mm-hmm. Telling them that is one thing. Showing them that is another, right? How do you change hearts and minds when people are starting out with such fear?
Look, we have an amazing project called Ecuador Film Residency, where we're inviting high-quality content creators to Ecuador to travel all around our country and from a very authentic and genuine perspective to tell their audience.
Storytellers.
Storytellers, exactly. And we already had two content creators. They came to Ecuador. They did an amazing video, an amazing storytelling, and it comes from their heart. So I think nowadays we have to, it's not about like the old days where you promote a country with an ad, but it's all more about
advertisements. I hate to say it, may not sell it. Mm-hmm. And promotions may not sell it, and discounting may not sell it.
I wouldn't suggest the business to lower their prices. I think Ecuador has so much beautiful things to offer that we're undervalued.
You know, you mentioned two things that I want to talk about, and hotels are so guilty of this, and the travel industry is too. You don't need to be competitive on rate anymore. You need to be competitive on value. That's what you need to be competitive on. So people really understand that I've always said, if you can understand the process and appreciate the process, that's when you value the product.
I agree 100%. And nowadays, travelers are looking for these unique experiences that Ecuador has to offer. And it's all about creating the perfect travel experience to the traveler and not about giving discounts to your clients.
When people make a decision to come to Ecuador in this environment, they almost have to like make a conscious decision, I'm going in spite of something, right? I'm going no matter what everybody else tells me, right? So when you meet with them, what do they tell you?
You know, Peter, I've been traveling since I was 15, 16 years old, not only in Ecuador, but all over the world. I started as a backpacker, and I come from the private sector, and I've worked in different hotels in Ecuador. So I have a very close relationship with travelers who come to visit us in Ecuador. And one of the things that I hear the most when they come to Ecuador is people. People of Ecuador are so friendly, so hospitable, and they make the experience to travel in Ecuador unique. And it's so beautiful to hear that, because in the hotels that I worked in Ecuador before, I see in the rural areas how tourism gives an amazing new opportunity opportunities for people in the, like, women in the rural area, for example. They found an amazing opportunity to work in tourism, and to see how they grow in the industry, how they are an amazing cooks, they're amazing guides, they're an amazing hostess.
But especially at a time right now where everybody's suffering from job shortages and staff shortages. I mean, they can't fill the positions.
Yeah, and you know, like, for example, in the rural areas, you can have a new hotel opening or operating in Ecuador, and it's employing about 30, 40 people from that local community that they used to work in the banana or the cacao or the flower plantations, which is a more type of, like, a very rough job. Instead of they coming in the tourism sector, that gives way better salaries, better experience working in our industry. So I really believe that tourism needs to be the vehicle for development of our countries.
And you're doing that, but of course you do have those challenges of staffing shortages. You have challenges of fuel prices, mm-hmm. right? Even though, you know, there's some oil going on, it's still a problem.
Yeah, I mean, there are always going to be issues, but we need to be very smart and strategic on how we solve those challenges. But there are always, I mean, tourism is a very dynamic sector. It's very sensitive to the outside world. So we have to keep pace of it.
You almost have to anticipate it.
Exactly. You need to be anticipated and act very quickly.
Now, of course, one of the biggest problems that every country faces, and this is pre-pandemic as well, is airlift, mm-hmm. right? You can't build it, and they can't come if they can't get on a plane and get there, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so we in Ecuador, what we're doing is working very hard in promotion, but at the same time, we need to build bridges. So we need to work the connectivity of Ecuador. We cut down taxes for the airline industry, for them to come back to Ecuador. We're signing open skies agreement with the U.S., which is our biggest market. So we are on the right step.
Explain what an open skies agreement means to America.
All right, so well, basically, back in the day, so let's say a couple of months ago, there were only a specific limit of flights and seats from the States to Ecuador and to Ecuador to the States. So the American government said, hey, let's eliminate that limit, but we need to have the same treaties. So, for example, Ecuador used to charge 5% tax for American companies that brought their money from Ecuador back to the States. So in order to sign that open skies agreement, we needed to eliminate that tax. We've done it. So we're taking steps in the right direction.
And now you just got to find an airline that wants to come.
Well, there are a couple of them. So they were super happy because now we have flights from Ecuador to Costa Rica that we didn't have before. We have new airlines flying from Guayaquil to New York. So the results have been very immediate. And that's just the beginning.
I remember my first flight from Ecuador back to the United States was on Equatoriana. And it was on an old 707 that had been basically discarded by Pan Am. And we had to land first in Guayaquil because we couldn't carry enough fuel because of the altitude of Quito. Then we had to stop in Mexico City. And then we finally got to LA. This was a milk run like you couldn't believe. But it was amazing to see all the hoops that that airline had to jump through just to get from Quito to Los Angeles. And needless to say, Equatoriana is no longer with us.
Yeah, now we have a new Ecuadorian airline that is flying domestically. It's called EcuAir. And we're hoping, crossing fingers, they start flying internationally very soon. And now connectivity with the U.S. is better than before. We have direct connectivity with 5 cities in the States, which are New York, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Atlanta, and Houston.
Right, now you got to get Los Angeles in there.
Yes, that's something that we want to achieve the next year.
We're working
hand in hand with the airline industry and with the airports as well.
Well, just make sure they don't look at you as a bastard child and they actually treat you with respect. That's the biggest problem that all the countries in Latin America have with U.S. airlines.
Yeah, no, I think we have a very professional relationship and things are for the better in the near future.
My thanks to Minister Olson. Now, if you're looking to get from point A to point B, most folks would never consider taking this airline. But it turns out to be one of the better, more efficient carriers. Not many Americans know it, and yet Copa, based in Panama, flies to all the major cities in the U.S. But if you just use the airline not just to go to Panama, but through it, Copa could be the right connection. Pedro Heilbron, the airline CEO, has figured out the fine art of gate-to-gate international connections. And it all happens in Panama City.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome, sir.
Hi, Peter.
So let's talk about it, because if I want to go, for example, from Los Angeles to Jamaica, or Los Angeles to Central America, or Los Angeles down to South America, in many cases, it makes a whole lot more sense to go through Panama. You've hubbed it here to the point where, and you've got your turnaround times down. I like to call you guys like the Southwest Airlines of Latin America, simply because you're flying one type of equipment. You're training everybody in one type of equipment, which is really efficient, and you've perfected the art of turnaround.
Yes, so we are in a way very similar. Yeah, we're single fleet type is the Boeing 737, the 800s, and the MAX 9s right now, and we serve cities of all sizes. The most cities actually of any hub in Latin America, in the Americas. So,
that's a secret, more or less.
Yeah, to many passengers, not to our frequent travelers, but to many travelers and many passengers, it is. We serve like 16 cities in North America, including Canada, and all of Latin America, including many small cities you have never heard of. Well, you probably have heard.
Well, give me an example.
Well, Chiclayo in Peru, or Bucaramanga in Colombia, to name two. So these are cities that not a lot of people know, but at the same time are cities that are not connected. And when this whole hub concept started for Copa, the vision was to connect cities that were not connected to the rest of the continent, and cities where people thought there was no traffic, and that's why they were not connected. And we said, well, how can there be traffic if there are no flights? The flight has to come first. And, you know,
if you build it, they will come.
That was our approach at the beginning, actually.
Yeah. And now you're, what, 70 different destinations?
So, well, we were 80 before the pandemic. We have reactivated about 70. And we've actually also added a few new cities. We've added three new cities, including Atlanta in the U.S.,
So basically, you're out of L.A., New York, Atlanta, I'm assuming Chicago.
San Francisco, Las Vegas, Chicago, Tampa, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, Boston, Washington, and New Orleans. We haven't reactivated yet. And I think then Toronto and Montreal and like four cities in Mexico and a bunch of cities down south.
But all connecting here in Panama City.
Everything connects through our hub, what we call the Hub of the Americas in Panama. And our schedules are timed for really fast connections. And this is something we do six times in the day. So we have six connecting
bands. So you have six push times.
That's correct.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a lot.
So from like 6 in the morning to 10 at night, there are flights coming in and out of our Hub of the Americas in Panama, and all operating in very well programmed connecting banks.
So basically, you know, it's one thing to fly from A to B, but if the layover in B is 10 hours, it sort of defeats the purpose.
That is correct.
So what's your shortest turnaround time?
I think our minimum connect time is 30 minutes.
And these are all international flights when you add to it.
It's all international.
Wow.
But Panama has the advantage of gate-to-gate international connections. So we make them very fast and very convenient for the passengers. But there's also great shopping at Tocumen International Airport.
So you had to throw that in. Okay.
That is correct. So sometimes passengers actually
miss choose flights.
No, they actually choose a longer connection. Having a more immediate flight, they might choose a later schedule.
You know, I have to tell you, that's true for me. At the Milwaukee Airport in Wisconsin, there's a used rare bookstore. It's called Renaissance Books. It's independently owned. I'm a big supporter of independent bookstores. And I literally, once a year, will plan a flight that will lay over in Milwaukee for 5 hours for the only purpose of going to that store.
That's correct. And how many times are you in a meeting in a city where you know the airport is quite attractive and having time to spare, instead of waiting in the hotel, you go early to the airport because maybe there's a bookstore or maybe there's a restaurant you're looking for, and it's actually an attractive place to wait.
Let's shift gears for a second, because obviously we're living in a disrupted world. Mm-hmm. We're living in a world that's turned upside down and inside out, and it affects you just as it affects everybody else. It's one thing to be considered a low-fare carrier on one end or a business-class airline on another. How do you describe COPA in the world that we live in today?
I would say, that's a good question. So we are an efficient and consistent airline that caters to all kinds of passengers, because that's the only way to grow and be successful in a place like Latin America, where we're from and where we have our only hub. So that means that we have to cater to business travelers. We also have to cater to leisure passengers and to the visiting friends and relatives segment. And they all have different needs, and they all look at different, there are different things about the airline that are more important to each one of those. So we have a strong frequent flyer program, an amazing alliance with United, and we're a member of Star Alliance.
You have the same colors as United.
That comes from the Continental days.
I know.
Where Continental used to own 49% of Copa. So we have that. We have a very good and are inaugurating a great VIP club, a Copa club in Panama, the new terminal. So we have all that for the business traveler. But we also have we're very cost-effective in terms of our unit cost, and we can offer the pricing that a leisure traveler needs and demands, as well as a network of very attractive destinations in the Caribbean. And same for the VFR traffic.
Visiting friends and relatives.
Right. So we actually cater to all of those segments.
If we're looking at the trend in the last 2 years, the decimation of the pandemic, what's going on in Ukraine, how things are starting to come back, and the way they're coming back, wasn't it really a big surprise that it was led by the leisure travelers, right? That's what came back last summer, almost with a vengeance, right? You were filling a lot of planes with people saying, I've got to get out, I got to go. Is that still happening?
We're still seeing that. It was, I guess, one of the big surprises from the pandemic, how fast leisure traffic was going to come back. We were not prepared for that, but we were very happy to see it. So that trend continues today. Business traffic in itself is probably still about half of what it was pre-pandemic, but leisure is above, and VFR is holding steady. So we have to adapt, which means more promos and more leisure destinations.
So leisure will continue to lead the way.
We think so, yeah, in years to come, definitely.
And of course, then it gets blurred because the business traveler will stay an extra 2 nights, or the leisure traveler will get a business thing done. Because let's face it, we've gone in a world from working from the office, to working from home, to working from anywhere. So you're seeing what we call the great migration of people moving to secondary and tertiary cities to be able to live and work there, and they may not be coming back to the office. They may be doing their business travel from a place that never had business travel before.
That is true. We've seen a little bit of that, maybe not that much. But what we have seen is, which again, it was kind of the big surprise from the pandemic, is that people want to get out. They want to get out and travel, be it for business or for leisure, mostly for leisure, but or visiting friends and relatives. For some reason, and we could all guess those reasons because we were affected also. No one went unharmed by the pandemic. People were shocked by it, yeah. And one of the responses is traveling. is just getting out of home, getting out of their countries, doing the stuff they didn't do for over a year. But it's
Or two.
But it's also just continuing doing that, traveling and going to leisure destinations and enjoying life in a way, especially for those that can afford it, because there's, we know there's still people impacted by the pandemic.
We're talking also about this growth of a new subclass called digital nomads, people who literally are being encouraged by countries with different visa requirements now, or relaxation of visa requirements, to come and do an extended stay in that country.
Yeah, so Panama, it's one of those countries that came out with a digital nomad visa, which is in effect right now. And I don't know all the details, but it gives all kinds of benefits, and especially the right to stay here for you know, much longer than a normal tourist.
My understanding allowance. It's up to 2 years.
Yeah.
And so the question that I have is, when you think about cost of living in Panama, which has always been attractive.
Right.
Right? It's always been, how many Americans have retired here?
That is correct.
Right? Former military and then people just retiring. If you look at the healthcare here in Panama, every major U.S. hospital and clinic is represented here. So you have that built into the thing. Somebody comes down here to work for 2 years, then the question becomes, at the end of the 2 years, what makes you think they want to go home? What makes you think, what's going to happen then?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing for countries like Panama. You will describe us, and there are a lot of benefits. Security is another one, and world-class standards to go with all of that. So it's a great place for a digital nomad, and I hopefully that segment grows. We're dealing with our own digital nomads, which is our own employees who are enjoying working from home. So that's also going on.
Are they ever going to come back to the office?
Well, we came back this Monday, but in a hybrid mode. Some will work some days from home, and it's up to each person. I feel really good working from my office here.
I understand. Copa.
But, you know, once in a while, there are good reasons for staying home. So, you know.
Now, let's talk about, as an airline executive, you know, the two intangibles that you really can't control are labor and fuel. I mean, that's every airline has that challenge, especially fuel now.
Right.
With what's going on in the Ukraine, with oil prices spiking above $100, I should say $120 a barrel for the first time in maybe 14 years. You know, airlines are usually very quick to pivot simply because you're always adjusting your fares and the computer systems hundreds of thousands of times a day. Every airline does that. But in this situation, you know, you were on your way back. All the airlines are on the way back, and now the fuel hits. That's got to affect ticket prices.
Yeah, definitely. But it's also a time where it's harder to pass it through to the customer. When the last time fuel went through the roof in 2008, at least in Latin America, the economies were extremely strong. The currencies were valuable. It's a whole different environment right now, especially coming out of a pandemic. So it's a lot harder to pass on that cost, that fuel cost, to customers. Airlines will try. We will try, but we know we won't be as successful as back in 2008, the last time we went through something like that.
What's the tipping point, I guess? Because I just, you know, flew in here from Los Angeles, where it cost me, I'm not making this up, to fill my tank in my car, $6.29 a gallon. A gallon. I know. Now, there's got to be a tipping point above which you just can't tolerate that. A lot of people are saying, well, we're still so addicted to our cars, we can strap four members of our family in the car and put Granny on the roof and amortize our costs and still be able to travel on a dry vacation. Airline tickets is a different story because you're pricing it per ticket, of course, and those numbers can go very high.
There will be some of that, especially because that vacation, that driving vacation, can be a lot closer to home than whatever was planned for before fuel got so expensive, especially in the U.S., where it's so easy to drive and there's so many places to drive to. So if someone wants to go to the Caribbean, it has to fly there. But maybe that Caribbean trip can wait. Who knows? It's hard to tell. We do think that this will be another cycle. We've gone through this so many times before that we know that fuel prices would not stay that high. And, you know, in the meantime, we just have to be very, very efficient and very nimble in everything we do.
Well, there was a time when some airlines were really, you know, rolling the dice and hedging their fuel purchases. Southwest did that notoriously, and they did it well. Then you had Delta that went out there and thought, oh, we'll solve the problem. We'll buy our own refinery.
Right.
That didn't quite work out for them. How have you been able to handle your fuel costs?
Yeah, we're not hedged. We used to be hedged in the old days, and it never worked out. So you know, we decided that we were never going to beat the market. And over time, it was not going to work out. It was just going to be a premium that we would pay over our fuel costs. So we haven't been hedged for, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 years. And we're fine with that. And we know that this cycle will end. And it will go back to something approaching normal.
You know, the algorithms that the airlines used to use before the pandemic to be able to project demand or set prices, I think you had to throw all those out, right? They don't make any sense anymore. So what are you depending on to project demand now?
Well, it was very difficult to project demand coming out of the pandemic. I mean, we're still in a pandemic, but we were shut down for over 5 months. We didn't fly in 2020. We started flying in the last quarter. And
you were literally shut down.
We were shut down 100%. We parked every aircraft. And it was not until the fourth quarter where we started flying in a normalized way. But again, a very small percentage of our previous flights or hours. And as we started growing, demand was all guesswork. We had no way to have any idea of how to forecast demand. So we just went with it and we scheduled flights and depending.
If people showed up, they showed up.
Well, yeah, and then we had to, depending on the bookings coming in, we would add capacity or cut back capacity. We did as much adding as we did cutting back and canceling like never before, which is not great for customers, by the way. But now we're at a point where it's a lot easier to predict demand. We have over a year of actually flying.
And now you can see the trends.
And we can see the trends, so it's a lot easier now.
My thanks to Pedro, to Minister Olson, and Minister Eskilsen. And my thanks to you for listening to the special Eye on Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, and there's a ton of it, just log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Eye on Travel podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Eye on Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Eye on Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Eye on Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.